again to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast, for Detroit Lions fans around the world. We are live in high definition, recorded for your ears to listen whenever you like at your convenience. PODcast, Pride of Detroit podcast, prideofdetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know the gig by now. I'm Chris Lemieux, the adequate host at adequate host. Joined as always by Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader at Detroit on Lion, who you can hear his voice right now.
Hey, you said we were global. How global do you think we are?
I get hits from Blog Talk Radio, in some other places. Most of our, it's Anglosphere still. It's mostly the Anglosphere still, but that means like we do.
We had that Brazilian guy, right? We had that guy from Brazil ask us that question, that food question. Sorry, I don't remember your name.
I noticed someone else was, I was tweeting about some Italian soccer over the weekend, and I noticed we had an Italian Lions fan who follows us.
Okay.
And I know we've got quite a few guys in the British Isles. I don't want to say just GB Lions Twitter, because I know I think we got one guy out there from Ireland as well. But UK represents pretty well.
Well, shout out to our global listeners.
Yeah, Europe and beyond. And always, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore POD. How are you doing, Ryan?
Doing wonderful. I'm glad that we're so well represented around the world. We're like the United Nations for Detroit podcasting.
I'm looking at our Blog Talk Radio stats. And it's kind of hard to tell because some of these are false hits. Actually, it says here, so United States, 97%. Canada is about 1% in there. Germany.
Whoa.
And then the United
Kingdom. Canada.
And then the United Kingdom and then Ireland. And I know about some of our German listeners. I've gotten emails from them before. So, and I see Brazil is represented, India, China, Japan, Australia. I know about, we've got quite a few Aussies who follow us. So we're out here.
But Canada, your football is terrible. Why aren't you following us more? Come on.
You know what?
You're trying to get a rise out of Chris, aren't you?
You know what? I've been resisting it for a long time, but just because of these numbers, I will say I would appreciate the CFL a lot more if it was four down football. That's my only gripe with the CFL. Three downs is crap.
Meters.
They use yards in CFL. What are you talking about meters? Yes. Yes.
Well, I figured
bullshit is this.
But I figured the meters were the conversion from four downs to three downs. That's not a metric conversion. Oh, okay.
No. It's just they play three downs up there. It's a two and out rather than a three and out.
How long are there minutes? Are there minutes at the same time?
Will you stop?
What year is it there?
Happy Memorial Day for those of you in America. Hope you did a lot of troop respecting over the holidays and meat eating. And maybe baseball watching. Let's see here. What else we got before we dive into the Lions? Hockey news. I did want to shout out to the Nashville fans out there. I know it's what Nashville and Pittsburgh in the Stanley Cup Finals. And Nashville likes throwing catfish on the ice. Sounds vaguely familiar, but I'm not one of those to hate on a tradition kind of co-opted by someone else. I mean, a lot of the Nashville fans were originally Detroit fans, from what I understand, Pred Wings. And I'm all about them throwing catfish, because if it's something I like, it's like watching Pittsburgh get their panties in a bunch about shit being thrown on their ice.
The most sincerest form of flattery is imitation, right?
No, I'm not trying to hate on Nashville.
I know.
I want this more to be about how Pittsburgh seems like they're trying to charge the guy who threw a catfish in the ice the other night with like an actual felony now or something.
Well, if I remember correctly, wasn't Pittsburgh trying to pull that stunt during the finals, I think, one year where you couldn't wear an opposing team's jersey into the arena? I know Tampa Bay did it. But I want to say that Pittsburgh did something petty like that, too.
I don't know about that, but I know in 2008-09, you could not actually buy octopus in fish markets in Pittsburgh. You had to show your driver's license, because they wanted to see if you were from Michigan. And they wouldn't let you buy it if you had a Michigan driver's license.
That's discrimination.
Part of me is like, yeah, that's petty, whatever. But part of me is like, that's kind of the fun of sports too, right? Like, it's a silly rivalry, but that's fine.
But charging a man with a felony, right, or charging a man with anything for throwing a catfish in the ice is excessive. And
put a lifetime ban on him. Then you can wear that like a badge of honor, you know? Like, well, ban him from
back
the arena.
To Pittsburgh again. Yeah. He's a Nashville fan.
Well, and you know what? That's fine. That's Pittsburgh's loss of commerce.
Loss of commerce. Oh man.
Let's keep this podcast rooted in capitalism, okay?
In capitalism? No, let's not.
Speaking of capitalism, Jeremy had something to say about Golden Tate.
Golden Tate, big Nashville fan. He's from Tennessee. He's a big Predators guy. If you check his Twitter timeline, he's all up in Predators Twitter right now. But
I mean, rough loss for him on Monday. Predators have a very fun team right now. PK Subban's on that team. Seth Jones is on that team. I'm pulling for the Preds.
I think any true Wings fan is.
So, not much going on here, but we got some big news on the running back side. The Lions, for some reason, have signed Matt Asiata. Again, for some reason. But we're going to talk about it because it's Matt Asiata, who was with the Vikings last year. He was kind of... where would you describe his place on their depth chart, Jeremy? Like one word to describe, an adjective or a noun, if you will, that would best illustrate for the people at home his position on that depth chart.
Desperation?
I'll take it. Ryan, do you have a better word?
Nope, I don't. I was trying to think of one. I was thinking about saying non-existent, but he definitely did exist.
He got a lot of touches.
He got a lot of touches by circumstance, right?
Yeah, pretty much. So it was, what was it? So like, yeah, they started the year without Adrian Peterson, or he got hurt very early, if I remember.
He did. And then, he got hurt 3 games in, and then it was the Jerick McKinnon show.
And then Jerick McKinnon was ass.
They remember that Jerick McKinnon is a third down back, yes.
Didn't McKinnon also get hurt at some point, too? I'm trying to remember. I don't
think he did.
He did. I think he missed a game. He missed one game for injury. And then after the Broncos cut ties with Ronnie Hillman, they took a flyer on Hillman. And that was a failed experiment. It was just a disaster in their backfield last year.
Well, because it was a disaster up front, right? Like, anyone you threw back there is going to have some trouble and probably get injured at some point.
But I don't think that ceiling on Matt Asiata with a good line is that high either. Like, this is a guy that they, I don't know, they're just kind of like, we'll see what we got here, I guess. You've taken away all other options. McKinnon's hurt today? All right, I guess. What about Hillman? No? Okay.
I mean, let's be honest, you're bearing the lead here. Signing Matt Asiata isn't the one that's pulling in the headlines.
I'm getting to it. Don't fluff my flow.
Fluff my flow.
That sounds dirty. I don't exactly know what that means.
Yeah, you wish you
I'm not a fluffer.
Okay, before we get on to that news that you want to jump my gun on, where is Asiata coming into this? Is this a body for camp, or is someone at the bottom of the running back depth chart in trouble right now? Like, is Dwayne Washington going to have to look over his shoulder, or is this, I don't know. You tell me.
Yes, he is. I think this is a legit signing. I don't think we can pencil him in as like, oh yeah, Asiata's on the team, but he's legitimate competition, I think, here. He's a guy who's been in the league for a while. He's a guy that brings, and I know we're going to get to it later, but he brings some fullback experience too, so he kind of has versatility there where he can play, you know, tailback, he can play fullback. He's not particularly great at either, but he has experience. He knows how to play the position, and that's something that the Lions don't really have a lot of. Basically all of the Lions tailbacks right now are very, very young. So at the very least, he's a veteran guy that'll be there during camp.
For Asiata, it seems like his way into the backfield is to prove that he's a really good pass protector, because I'm not sure if the Lions really have that at this point. I can't make much of a fair assessment of, I guess, Amir Abdullah's ability to pass block. We've seen how Theo Riddick isn't much of a pass blocker either. So that would put it all on pretty much Zach Zenner's shoulders. I think that they might actually, and I saw this tossed out on Twitter the other day, they might actually go with five running backs now that they don't have Burton.
Well, that's okay. That was kind of my next question, and you've kind of tipped my hand now, too. To make room for him, Michael Burton was cut. End of the fullbacks, farewell to Michael Burton. We'll get to him in a second, but you say five backs. You think that's where it's going to be, five backs. So that would be...
Potentially. I think it would come at the expense of a quarterback, though. I think that they would potentially go with two quarterbacks, and I mean, legitimately though, even if they decide to cut ways with Kaya, and they want it because it seems like during Caldwell's tenure here, they've gone with two quarterbacks. So I don't know if whoever wins that camp battle, maybe they might just go with just the backup, and I think that would definitely open up the opportunity because I'm really intrigued to see how the. I think that the kick return and the punt return game is has a little bit to do with it, even though I think that position in particular might get picked up by a wide receiver. I think, I don't know, like a part of me just still wants to think that Dwayne Washington has some kind of value as a kick returner.
Yeah, I think we could probably see Washington still stick around because of his special teams play. I just think it's going to suck when Jake Rudock loses his job to Matt Asiata.
All right. But, I mean, I think it would be insanity to carry five running backs and two quarterbacks because, to me, not only do I think Dwayne Washington has an easier route to the practice squad, I think I value Brad Kaya on the roster more than I do Dwayne Washington.
The only reason I said what I just said, Jeremy, is so that I could get that out of you. So thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. you're only going to have probably three, maybe four active on game day. Four seems even excessive of that. So yeah, like, why would you carry five? Like
this fifth running halfback would just be there, just be marked inactive, pretty much.
Right. Well, and, I mean, so would the third quarterback probably, but
sure.
It just seems a little silly, and I know Lions fans might want that fifth running back, considering how depleted the running backs got last year, especially once the Theoretic went out towards the end of the year. But we're talking about the Matt Asiatis and Dwayne Washingtons of the world. These are guys that you could probably pick up off waivers anyways if desperation kicked in. So when it comes down to it, I think Matt Asiata right now is definitely in the runnings for that third running back position, if not the fourth. And at this point, I would say he's a favorite to make the final 53 man roster, but that can change. I mean, a ton can change in the next 2 months.
Do you think he makes the roster?
Right now I do. Yes.
Okay.
Well, we should probably say farewell then to Michael Burton, and this was kind of fascinating because, I mean, we've seen production out of him. It's just that he's just been left in the dust of this changing offensive scheme, which seems kind of fascinating because we've been talking a lot. We talked a lot through last year about power running scheme, power blocking, and Michael Burton seemed well-suited for the counter-blocking action on that. And for whatever reason, they just didn't utilize him, though. So that's kind of the end of the fullback experiment.
He just wasn't a part of Jim Bob Cooter's offense. And I think the most interesting thing to me now is... first and foremost, I guess, I'll be intrigued to see where he lands because I think that he definitely will serve a valuable role on some team in 2017. I think that he has a ton of value. I think that he's a really talented player. It's just that Cooter's offense doesn't need a fullback.
But how many teams do need a fullback in this day and age, though?
I don't know. The Patriots use a fullback. The Steelers use a fullback. There's a lot of teams that still utilize fullbacks. I mean, the Panthers utilize a fullback. There's still a demand out there for fullbacks.
It's dwindling, but it is out there. And to me, like the strange part about this is that I think the Lions' short yardage running situation has been an issue for a very long time. And I think last year specifically, there were so many times when the Lions decided to pass on third and short, and people got very frustrated because, you know, it didn't always work out, and there was a couple of really ugly play designs that didn't work out. And so instead of, you know, maybe expanding their playbook and allowing some more power eye formations, that sort of thing, Jim Bob Cooter's just kind of closing the page on that one, ripping it out of the playbook. And I don't want to say he's limiting his options more, but if this is the end of the fullback, I better see some stuff that I've been dying for the past 4 or 5 years. Some split back, some Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah on the field at the same time. You know, something more creative than what we saw last year. And I know the offense was hamstringed by how terrible the defense was, but if this truly is the end of the fullback, like it certainly seems like it is, I better see some new stuff. That's all I have to say.
New stuff, huh?
New stuff. New shit.
And just that new shit. You want that new shit out here. All right. Well, why don't we take a break here unless we've got anything else to say about... who is the other signing they picked up? I don't know much about him, just that he has a good name for the name bracket.
Yeah, he's a guard, that an undrafted free agent guy who's didn't even have an NFL.com draft profile. So
Bozic. Yeah,
Camp Body.
I mean, it's a pretty stacked name tournament this year. I don't even know if that cracks top 10.
Yeah, I'm gonna have a tough time cracking the field down to 64. I think, which I didn't have at all last year, but. That'll get going once OTAs are over, in case you guys are wondering.
Oh, I had one last pontification on Matt Asiata, and I only use that word because Zaglinski has been throwing 10-cent words at me on Twitter for the past week and a half. But so in 2014, arguably Asiata's best season, where he got the biggest like workload he's ever gotten, because that was the year that Peterson got suspended. Minnesota, according to Football Outsiders, had the 13th best offensive line, and they were actually one of the best lines when it came to stuff rank and when it came to power rank. And he still only managed to average 3.5 yards a carry.
I mean, that's a fair point to make, but it's also, I feel like it's a little misleading with a back like Asiata, right? Because he's in, this year probably not as much as normal, but he's in there for short yardage situations, right?
Yeah, so I mean, if he's averaging 3.5 yards a carry on downs like, you know, second and two and third and one, then you love 3.5 yards per carry. But it's something that will definitely be worth a deep dive is looking at Asiata in short yardage situations and how well he performs, because that's going to be, I think, his singular role here.
Yeah, essentially.
That and pass blocking.
If you're expecting someone to like literally be like a two-headed horse with Amir Abdullah, you're not getting that in Matt Asiata. I don't think anyone should be fooling themselves into believing that.
Two-headed horse, huh?
Yep. You don't know those? They have them out here in Cali. You guys wouldn't understand.
Okay. All right, let's soon take that
enough.
Break.
Chris will know soon enough.
Soon enough. Yeah, I'm going to have to fight them with claw and fang.
By the way, Chris, you're doing such a great job. Can we talk about how great a job you're doing?
Son of a bitch. Why are you doing this to me? We could entirely next segment, but we're not. There's going to be something else next segment. Stick around. Podcast rolls on. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along here. This is going to be a shorter one this week. We're trying to figure out what to do, but we should talk some OTAs. Not too much report from the field right now, but Jeremy, you want to lead this one off? You want to kick us into this?
Yeah, well, I mean, I feel like we have to kind of address OTAs, even if it's kind of a low news item. It's exciting to see the team out there in practice again. The unfortunate part is that they're very limited in their media access, so... As of Tuesday night, There have been four practices, and only one of them has been open to the media. So all we're getting in terms of content on those three other practices are a 90-second highlight video that's obviously cherry-picked of what we see, and photos, basically, of the day's events. So there's not a lot of, you know, meat that we can pull from the bones here, but... You know, everyone's eager to get whatever news that they can, and so I figure let's talk about it a little bit. Let's talk about what we know about the Lions in their 2017 version so far, and what we're looking for, what we're impressed with already, and I guess, you know, if we can come up with nothing, let's just talk about how useless OTAs are and our hand-wringing over them. But I think... The biggest news to come out of practices last week was that Jared Davis starting at middle linebacker right away, much in the vein that they did with Taylor Decker last year at left tackle. Now, the question now is this a real thing? Is that exactly what's going on with Jared Davis? Or is it because Tahir Whitehead is out with an undisclosed injury? And we still don't know the answer to that because it still looks like Tahir's out, but we're still kind of looking at that. And I get the feeling if it was an injury thing, then I'm not sure Jared Davis would be that guy in the middle. Like if Tahir Whitehead were to come back, play middle linebacker, why wouldn't you have Jared Davis taking, you know, weak side snaps because that's where he's going to be in the regular season and just, you know, bump up your backup, like your Paul Warlow or whoever. Am I reading that right? Do you think, guys, Ryan, is that how you see it as well?
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I think I'm definitely in on Jared Davis starting from day one. I think that the way that just Quinn and Caldwell reacted to the pick and how glowingly they spoke about him and, you know, acknowledging the fact that he's going to come in and play middle linebacker. I think that him playing at middle linebacker, not a whole lot of that has to do with Tahir Whitehead's injury at all.
And that makes it very interesting to me because now both of Bob Quinn's first round draft picks have been at absolutely crucial positions, right? Like he's throwing rookies into the fire. Left tackle, your most important position on the offensive line. Middle linebacker, maybe your most important position on defense. You're starting your rookies from day one there. That's showing a lot of faith in your own drafting, and that's getting the most out of you can with your first round pick. And that's, we'll see how it works in the long term, but, you know, obviously the short term investment on Taylor Decker seems like a very wise move. We'll just have to wait on Jared Davis, I suppose.
Sure, and the other thing, too, is that at 16, I believe, was when Decker was chosen in the first round, right?
That sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so Decker taken at 16, a lot of left tackles to pick from, or a lot of tackles, I guess, in general to pick from in that draft, but Quinn addressed an area of need and got a starter right out of the gate. At middle linebacker, I'm not sure if there was a whole lot of talent that you would say you would... I mean... I think you could make the case that there was some other talent on the board that maybe you thought was, I guess, for lack of a better way of saying it, more talented than Jared Davis is, but it was definitely a position of need. So it'll be interesting to see going forward how Bob Quinn prioritizes a position of need. Say for some godforsaken reason, you know, the running back position is just as bad as it was last year in this coming up season. Do you think that he would prioritize drafting a running back? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how much he values and how much he prioritizes a quote unquote like position of need.
Yeah, and I think ideally going forward, the Lions won't have as big of a desperate need as they did left tackle last year, and they did middle line even more so this year. I think with middle linebacker, the hope is that they aren't so desperate for a need and they don't need to necessarily reach for. Not that they did necessarily reach, but that they may have had to if the situation had arose where maybe Jared Davis wasn't there, whoever they love maybe wasn't there. We all knew that the Lions were going to take a linebacker in the first 2-3 rounds. They had to at that point. They don't want to be in that position in the future, so things kind of lined up fortunately with Jared Davis, but let's rotate to a different guy in OTAs. And the other injury news that was at least interesting to me was Theo Riddick. He was there. He was participating, I think, in individual drills last Wednesday is when the media was there, but not in team drills yet. So presumably this double wrist surgery that he had in the offseason still bothering him quite a bit. I expected him to be full and ready to go. Are you guys worried right now about Theo Riddick?
I'm not concerned. It's still May. I guess it's June now, technically. I mean, we're coming up on it, but I don't know. I don't want to put too much stock in an injury in June, and I don't want to say that the other thing is I don't want it to be misconstrued as it being a reactionary to the Matt Asiata signing. Like, I don't think that because of the Asiata signing that they're at all concerned about Riddick's health. I'm not concerned about Riddick's health. I think that he'll be fine by the start of the season.
Yeah, and we're also at OTAs, and while OTAs are important for the younger players, at this point, Theo Riddick is a veteran, right? Especially in this group of tailbacks, so there's really no point in pushing it if there's even any question. And I think that's something that it's important to let everyone know that's, you know, worrying about any sort of injuries, either with Tyre Whitehead or Theo Riddick or anyone else who's wearing a red jersey or whatever. There's no reason to force anything. The guys aren't even in pads yet. Just take it easy. And I think that's why we're kind of searching for topics to talk about right now, is because OTAs, even if the media was there every day, there's not a ton of conclusions you can draw without the pads when a lot of the starters are going to be taking days off. It's just exciting to see them out there because that means we're closer to football. When we're recording this, we're exactly 100 days from football.
So, there it is. There's yes. That magic number. I was waiting for someone to mention it. There, yes. You said it. Congratulations.
I got it out. We are double digits from here on out. By the time you're listening to this, we are down to double digits. Anything else from OTAs that you guys want to talk about? I think Michael Roberts has been getting some hype. I know that'll turn Chris's head a little bit. Excited about Michael Roberts.
Thumbs up. Yep. I don't have much. It's just training. We're talking about practice.
We are. Not a game.
Not a game. Mm-hmm. We're talking about practice. We're talking about practice about a bunch of guys not even wearing pads. So I guess with that being said, though, maybe the one last position we can talk about is wide receiver. I don't think we talked about it a whole lot. Yeah, I think the wide receiver position is one that in OTAs you can still like get a lot from. For a Robert Zaglinski word of the day, it's a position where you can ascertain a lot of intel on. So the one name that I've seen pop up an awful lot is Kenny Golladay. Jeremy, do you have some insight on Kenny Golladay?
Basically, I know that Rothstein out of the ESPN beat writer, he was very impressed with what he saw. Good hands. I think above average athletics that he was expecting. We don't have to worry about him making the team. He's obviously going to be making the team. To me, actually, a little more interesting is the number four spot, because I think a lot of us kind of penciled in and assumed our favorite Jace Billingsley was a shoe in there. But I think there's legit competition that he has there. We heard a couple good things from Jared Aberderis in the first week of practice. We saw him make a pretty impressive catch in one of the highlight reels from last week. And then, I mean, we can't forget, I believe TJ Jones was taking first team reps pretty much all last week. So that's something also to keep an eye on. Maybe this team is higher on TJ Jones than we thought they were. And then you also, you have the kick returner out of Michigan State, Keyshawn Martin. There it is. I don't really think he has much of a shot, but if he's going to win it, he's going to win it, the kick return job. And that's another thing to keep an eye on, obviously, is the kick return job. The one interesting note I think I have out of that battle is that Jamal Agnew didn't appear to be returning kicks. Hmm. And a lot of people thought that might be his way onto the roster as a fifth round pick at cornerback. But again, it's early. They're trying things out. Not all the practices are open. Maybe he has been trying that out behind the scenes. We'll just have to wait and see.
So let me throw this out to everybody then. Who do you think will be the Lions' number four receiver? And do you think that they would entertain the thought of keeping five wide receivers.
I really don't care who's the fourth receiver.
I would definitely consider...
Of course you don't care, Chris. You're not a Lions fan.
God damn it.
Yes! God, that is a long callback. Man, we haven't had one of those in a while.
We haven't had that. That's a long time coming. I agree.
I think I would definitely consider taking a fifth wide receiver over a fifth running back.
I completely agree.
Now that fullback's out, you might have that room there. But I still think they're only going to go with... No, you know what? I think they could go with five. I would say it's about a 50-50 shot in my mind at this point. Last year, they obviously only kept four. I think that may have been a mistake. Not that they had the talent last year to fix that, but I think this team is... We're going to see it a little more spread out this year, especially with Ebron being able to be out there as a wide receiver now that they have actual tight ends on the roster. Maybe Ebron as more of a wide receiver, maybe that's a reason not to keep five wide receivers than four instead, but that's something to keep an eye on. Right, to answer your original question, I think TJ Jones is in the lead right now. I mean, if he's taking first team reps, and again, we shouldn't be reading too much into that, but that's clearly where the Lions coaches are at right now. But I think that can, like, I think everyone's on a very level playing field right there, and I think it's really going to play out in training camp.
Going off what you said, though, about being cautious about who's lining up and taking first team reps, I have no idea how this team decides who gets first team reps. Obviously, I think they want to see how well players play with the top line talent, and they want to cycle through that. But at the same time, you had at the beginning of training camp, Taylor Decker was just immediately inserted into playing left tackle. You have Jared Davis this year, who is immediately inserted to playing middle linebacker and getting first team reps. So I don't know how far, or I don't know how far to throw, or I don't know how much weight it holds that somebody like TJ Jones is getting first team reps. I still think that he's definitely in the running for it, just because he seems like he, for whatever reason, has kind of like the, I think he has maybe the lowest floor, or the highest floor, rather, sorry. He has the highest floor of maybe any of those receivers, like Jace or Ebradaris, or even Keyshawn Martin. So, and plus he has that return ability, so... I think I still see him making his way into the roster somehow. But I think I also see him making his way into the roster because they got a different type of wide receiver in Galladay during the draft who fit like a different athletic profile. Like if they would have got somebody that was similar to TJ Jones build, I would have imagined they would have tried to bring in a undrafted free agent who was maybe a big receiver. And I would think kind of the other way about it. I would think that he would have the inside track if they brought in, you know, hypothetical wide receiver who's 6'5".
Right. So. If Kenny Galladay's drafting means goodbye to anyone, it's probably Anquan Boldin, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to deal with that yet. I really
Sorry,
don't.
Chris. Sorry, Chris.
I'm trying to deal with it.
I was trying to bring you into the conversation a little bit, and if it had to be through the piercing truth of Anquan Boldin not coming back.
I have something lodged in the back of my throat right now, so I'm really trying not to cough too much into it, not to make more work for myself editing out, because there will be no coughing when I'm done.
But there might be some coughing, because you're adequate.
Just barely adequate.
Just enough coughing.
Just enough. Do you guys want to move on to the mailbag? I know we're going to do a shorter podcast this week, but I think we should... Okay, if I got the other thing here, might throw in the mailbag, but we'll be right back after the break. Mail time. Hashtag AskPOD. Get your questions in when we ask for it on Twitter. Hashtag AskPOD there, or when you see the AskPOD post up on PrideToDetroit.com. Jeremy, as always, we check our reviews first. Do we have any new reviews?
We do not. And this is about the fourth or fifth week in a row that we haven't had any reviews, and I know it's awesome. The off season. But I'm fed up. And so it is time to dole out a little bit of punishment to our viewers. I'm sorry, our listeners. I've developed a plan. It definitely is an evil plan, but I'm sorry. I'm not even in favor of this completely, and I wouldn't wish this punishment upon myself. But something has to be done. This is a two-way street, the Pride of Detroit podcast. We give you this 1 hour a week, every week. We don't ask for much in return, but we ask for something.
I can't believe we're begging for reviews.
No, this is not begging. This is punishing. This is a free podcast. This is a free podcast.
With advertising.
With advertising, but everyone has a 15-second skip button.
We're going to be maybe moving off the advertising soon. We've got something in the works.
Well, no, don't tell them that, because won't do that until we get at least 60
reviews. Well, either way,
reviews.
The punishment is here. Jeremy, just get to the goddamn punishment already.
No, this is all about the buildup. So, today we were introducing a new segment. It is called 20-Second Wrestling Talk. And if there is not a review next week, guess what? It's 40-second wrestling talk. And if there's not a review after that, it's 60-second wrestling talk. And we're going to keep adding 20 seconds until we get a review in here. And
here
I'm sorry, but this is what the people get if they don't pay the piper. This is new media. We're still trying to figure out how to make things profitable. And this is my back-ass words idea. And so, I'm sorry, guys, but if you don't know how to leave a review, you can email me at prideofdetroitjeremy@gmail.com, and I will show you step by step. But I that's all I have to say. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to take my earphones off for the next 20 seconds, and you guys have the floor.
I just want to say I'm very glad this is what this is, and not Jeremy trying to like actual physically punish me or something. Like trying to, like taking a switch or something. Anyway, let's go on. How are you feeling about Extreme Rules, Ryan?
I'm super duper looking forward to the fatal five way match for the number one contendership. Yeah. I think it's so intriguing to figure out who they're going to try to work into a Brock Lesnar program. I'm not sure if that program's going to take them all the way to SummerSlam. Do you think that they're going to have another match after this for the number one contendership?
Probably.
That's it. Oh, man. Ryan hugged that entire 20
Ryan,
seconds.
You hugged it, man. I want to talk about New Japan. Next week, I lead it off.
That's fine. We'll have 40 seconds next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I have no faith in our listeners.
Give them time. Anyway, let's go to the mailbag. Let's see here. Let's start with Dino asking us, what is your favorite prime number?
13, Datsuk.
That's a good answer. I don't know. 7's always a reliable one. My favorite number is 9, so I really can't use that as a prime number. So I'll go with 3.
Joey Harrington.
Yeah.
My favorite prime number is 71, because I like Evgeny Malkin.
You bastard.
Jesus.
It's either that or 97, the same year that I was born.
Gary Luke asks us, what is a realistic expectation for Antoine Williams in 2017?
That is a good question. I think he'll be the quote-unquote starting strong side linebacker, which in and of itself isn't really a starting position.
It's an important position nonetheless.
It is. You know, he'll be in there, I want to say, like 20% of the time or so. But in terms of like quality of play, I don't know if you can expect that much. Still really young, still a low round draft pick. I don't think the Lions really want him to be a true starter, unless they're forced into an injury situation. But I think you can expect a lot of improvement. I think a lot of people think that the Lions are big on him. So, but realistically speaking, just kind of a role player. Not a full starter, and maybe, you know, gets 30 to 40 tackles.
He will be better than Thurston Armbrister.
He will.
And that's a very low bar to set, but it's one that he can easily clear, and I think a lot of people would be happy with.
Do you think he could, if, let's say, the Lions move on from Tahir next year, do you think Antoine Williams is kind of lining up to potentially be his replacement?
I would agree with potentially. I would also think that they would maybe venture out to maybe find somebody else.
I mean, Jalen Reeves-Maybin, right?
Yes. Yes. I love Jalen Reeves-Maybin. He's going to be a strong candidate for the name bracket tournament just because I have a affinity for anybody who has a hyphenated last name.
Respected Madman asks us, which position group is the most quote-unquote set in stone, and which is the most quote-unquote fluid?
I'm going to go... Let's add a caveat to that question and say you can't choose quarterback.
Because
I think quarterback's pretty set in stone. Brad Kaya is your number two.
Three.
let's see. The position that's most set in stone.
I think wide receivers, mostly. At least the top of it.
I think that's a pretty good answer.
The top three, like, for sure.
I think even four might be set in stone. I couldn't give you the name right now because I don't care about the fourth wide receiver. But
it's not set in stone.
I think that's the opposite of set in stone if you can't get a name.
That is the joke. Jeremy, do you have an answer for this? Do you have a position that's most set in stone?
Tight end. Top three. I think they only carry three. I there was some talk in the Slack room about them potentially carrying a fourth, but Michael Roberts, Eric Ebron, and the guy I forget week in and week out. No,
Darren Fells.
Darren Fells. Darren Fells.
Oh, Darren Fells. Right. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. I think those are your three. The Lions could keep a fourth around like Colwick, but I think if they're going to keep Colwick around, give it a shot and try to get him on the practice squad.
The position that I think is most set in stone is long snapper. Because nobody can ever unearth the rock.
Someone needs to get a support group ready for Ryan because he's going to be hurting in late August, early September. And I already feel bad. And now it's going to hurt even more because there's no 75-man cut. So they're not even, like, it's just going to happen suddenly.
One fell swoop of the axe.
Don Muehlbach's name is going to be amongst 30 other and you're barely going to even see it.
No, don't say that. Don't say that his name is going to be amongst. No, his name does not stand amongst. His name stands out. If Don Muehlbach's name is on that cut,
when
heads will roll.
All right, most fluid position. What do we got there?
Most fluid position. Chris is all in on the mailbag.
All in on roster talk right
see,
now.
Here I was trying to be good and taking the Lions questions first.
The most fluid position to me is cornerback. Outside of Darius Slay, I honestly could see it landing a variety of ways. I'm not sure if Jalen Tabor will actually, you know, unseat Nevin Lawson, nor do I think he should. I know we're all kind of big proponents of Nevin Lawson over here. But that nickel corner spot is completely up for grabs. I'm not even sure who will end up getting it. And I have no idea who's going to be the fourth cornerback.
That's a good answer. I mean, I have to go with defensive end. Like, I don't even know who the second starter is.
Kerry Hyder.
Cornelius Washington? Is it Kerry Hyder?
I think it is Kerry Hyder.
Kerry Hyder is such a weird guy. Like, I could see him being the starter. I wouldn't even be completely shocked if he didn't make the team.
What?
I mean, you wouldn't be completely shocked if he didn't make the team.
He played the most snaps of any defensive end last year.
Just on the basis that there is no depth there. That's
what I'm saying. That's the only reason I feel is just because there's no other options there.
But I think he's also proven himself at this
Kerry
point,
Hyder's
too.
Good. Kerry Hyder is good.
He hasn't proven himself as a starter at all. And
I'm not saying he's a starter, but he'll be there on the roster.
But he... People love Kerry Hyder because he started out very hot. He trailed off in a big way the rest of the season. A big way. He had, like, a streak of 7 games where he had 1 sack.
Okay, but he had a sack and no one else did.
Welcome to the rest of the defensive line for the Detroit Lions in 2016.
You're right. And that's why it's very much in flux.
Yeah, but I would not say that I wouldn't be shocked if Kerry Hyder got cut. If Kerry Hyder got cut, wow, our defensive line is in shambles.
Sherlock Loam asks us, out of all three Detroit sports mascots, Rory, Paws, and is it Hopper?
No,
Hopper?
It should be Hooper.
Hooper, okay. Who would win in a WWE-style cage match? So I'm assuming this is a three-man elimination here.
Yeah, it's a triple threat match.
Watch yourselves, you're already over quota.
This isn't about anything in wrestling, though. We are trying to book this, though.
The real question, I think, here is which one of these mascots
is going to destroy the rest. It's I don't know. Okay, I'm going to make a case against Paws because he's trash. Like, I think he probably goes first. So the question is between, for me, Hooper and Rory.
Well, hold on. We need to decide what kind of cage match is this. Is it a Hell in a Cell? Like, is there a top on the cage, or do you have to escape from the cage?
That's true. I think he's saying it's a cage match, so you can climb up out of it.
Okay,
it's
not, so you have to climb up out of it.
It's not Hell in a Cell.
Okay. I think Hooper is most likely to climb to the top of the cell, and like
he's athletic.
Everybody thinks he's going to win, but then he turns around and he wants to showboat. So he dives off the cage and tries to land like a flying crossbody on somebody, but just completely misses or catches some knees. I don't know. Paws is trash. I completely agree with you. I don't like how friendly Paws is. I think he's too nice of a mascot.
Too much of a baby face.
Yeah, he's way too. He's like Roman Reigns. He gets like heel heat for being such a nice guy. Who likes Paws? Raise of hands here in the podcast room right now. Who likes Paws? I don't like Paws,
but here's the thing, and Chris cut off my question. The real question is which one of these mascots has the most cylinders? And that is Hooper. Because that guy brings the horsepower. That guy is going to win in a cage match or any other competition.
And that's why I want the horse head logo back for the Detroit Pistons. Because the horsepower pun was just too good there. It's too highbrow for this culture anymore.
How many cylinders do you think Cooper has?
I think Cooper's...
It's got to be like at least eight, right?
At least eight. He's got
a cool dozen.
I think he probably has a baker's dozen.
A racer's dozen? Is that a thing?
A racer's Cars? Dozen? How many is a racer's dozen?
God damn it. A dozen. That's what it is.
Okay. Perfect. Paws has the least amount of cylinders.
Negative cylinders.
Yeah. Can you have negative cylinders? Does that mean you're, like, not mobile?
Or are you just going backwards?
So we're going with Hooper unless he decides to showboat, and then Rory will have a come-from-behind steal.
I mean, we have to give Rory credit for injuring
Jamal Charles.
Okay, next question here. Robert Zaglinski, hey, how deep does Ryan's treachery go? Where does this deceptive hoodwinking end?
It's where you begin, Rob. Bring your ass back on this podcast and I'll show you where the treachery is and I'll show you where I'll put it.
We're getting some serious rail and justify going here. We got another Ryan question for some reason. Young veteran asks us, how does Ryan plan on turning the Lakers into a dominant force?
Yeah, so as probably many of you don't know, like I also do a very teeny tiny bit of work for Detroit Bad Boys, the SB Nation affiliate that works, that writes about the Detroit Pistons. That's where I get all my cylinders from. That's what really keeps me going during the off season.
You steal cylinder valor.
I steal cylinder valor and I bring it back and I share it with the rest of the group.
Sir, God. Who is your commanding key? I can't even finish my joke.
So in the, Ron Marshall Memorial mock draft that they have over at Detroit Bad Boys, I decided to sign up for it and take control of a team. And the team that I was given or bestowed to me was the Los Angeles Lakers.
Cool. So what is your plan?
My plan is to find someone to take Luol Deng's contract and I'm not going to draft Lonzo Ball.
Imagine that mess in LA. Good God. What is it with these Ryan questions? We've got one more Ryan question here, and I'm going to read this one off before we get to anything else. In keeping with Ryan's unforgivable act, which I'm assuming this is probably what Rob was talking about here, too. You basically Madden simmed Matt Stafford on every team out there.
You just saying it out loud makes me think of all the hours that I lost over this past weekend. Did.
Anyway, so the question is, what is your favorite NFC North team not named the Lions?
My favorite NFC North team not named the Lions That's an awful question. I would have to pick the
my favorite other NFC North team is death.
I would, but Chris, you have to have a favorite team first to pick another one.
Okay, get two in one go. Okay.
Mine's going to be the Vikings because I don't know why, but I still view them as the least threatening. Even when they were good, I still like viewed them as like, oh, they're just the Vikings. But I also have a Dante Culpepper jersey, so.
Now that Jared Allen is not on the Vikings, I can say the Vikings.
All right, going to go a little quicker here just to get some of these out. Now it's on to the food section here. Smog's Gold Coin asks us, make an argument for why mayo is good as a condiment.
There is a nuclear apocalypse, and that is the only food left.
I'm going to disagree with Jeremy on this. I am down with the mayonnaise as long as it is mayonnaise, and it's not Miracle Whip.
Yeah, fuck mayo. What do you feel about aioli? It's like, that's not mayo, but it's like mayo-related.
I'm down with aioli.
Okay.
Like aioli.
Yeah, I'm down with mayo, too. I'm down with mayo, too. Not on, like, everything, but, like, if you're eating a turkey sandwich or, like, a chicken sandwich, a little bit of mayo is fine.
Jeremy's mayo has to have avocado in it.
Because I'm a millennial.
Like, what else, no, what else are you gonna
put
on a...
that's not it at all!
What else are you going to put on a BLT? What else is going on a BLT? You just eating that thing dry?
Yeah, what do you put on your BLT, Jeremy?
BLT is a boring sandwich, I'm sorry.
What? I don't know.
You get, and if you need lubrication, you better have some fresh tomatoes in there, and that's fine. That's
enough.
It's
not about lubrication. It's
what is it about?
No, flavor. It's all about lubrication when it comes to greasing up those cylinders, those pistons. You got to keep those boys lubed.
Jesus Christ! All right, next question here. Joseph R. Sweeney, anyone watching Lucha Underground on the El Rey Network? The season starts back up tomorrow night.
Nope.
It's a lot of the
DM him your answer.
It is starting back up. I have the season pass. I've been watching since season
breaking
one.
Breaking the rules. I can't believe it.
Look, it's a question by a listener.
So?
Anyway.
How many have we not answered?
I thoroughly enjoy Lucha Underground. I got Alex into it. By my ranting and raving. I don't think I've gotten Ryan into it yet, but I will eventually. It's like a lot of what he's saying here. He's talking about like the quality cut scenes. It kind of runs like almost like a mash of WWE and he's put me on the clock and Mortal. It watches like Mortal Kombat is all I'm going to say. It's very fun to watch. And there are some thrilling matches like the All Night Long and, like, a lot of the stuff with Prince Puma, who is the wrestler Ricochet. There, I'm in under 20 seconds.
Yeah, so that's 20 seconds away from next week, or next time they added another
20
seconds,
we're
taking it away.
Second part of his question here. If not, does anyone else venture outside of their soft, cushy WWE shell to watch some real wrestling?
No, get the fuck out of here. We are not answering this. No. You can DM him your answer. That is ridiculous that you just broke our own rule.
It's not a rule that applies to the questions being asked.
We're talking about wrestling on the podcast. We are limiting ourselves to 20 seconds of wrestling on this podcast, and you just went an extra 40.
No, I didn't. I did not go an extra 40. Reading the question does not count towards the total. Josh LaFon, enemy of the show, asks us, what is a food that you hate that a lot of people like?
I mean, I feel like my answer to this is well documented. Mozzarella sticks.
Mozzarella stick, he says.
A food that you hate that a lot of people love.
You know what? I'm going to come out and say it. I come from Italian family and all, and I love a lot of the stuff, but I hate pesto.
Ooh.
Whoa.
I do not like pesto. I've never been able to stomach pesto. I just don't like it.
I'm taken aback.
I'm taken
aback. Pesto is delicious.
I just don't like basil. I don't know what it is. I just don't like basil. I don't like the pine nuts. I don't like the smell of it, the texture, like everything about pesto.
Is this because ragu doesn't do a pesto flavor?
Shut the fuck up.
I don't know. I can't give you a food that I don't like that a lot of people love, but I can give you a food that I love that a lot of people hate. Crispity, crunchity, peanut buttery, Butterfinger.
I thought you were telling me that was like the most popular candy. It sold billions of
it's
candy
true.
Bars.
Hold on. You've been hoisted by your own petard here. All of your defense of the crispity, crunchity, peanutty, Butterfinger has now backed you into this corner, sir.
Et tu, Chris?
I thought you were about to go into your Jesse camp. You kind of had that face. Game, hey, man.
Oh, now you're putting the pressure on me to do it. I'm not going to give it to you.
Well, Critical Perspective asks us, dream podcast guest. You can have anyone you want on the podcast for a 10-minute segment to talk Lions. Who is it? Ryan, why don't you take this one home?
Oh, man.
He said to talk Lions, by the way. He said to talk Lions.
We can have Jesse Camp on to talk Lions.
Oh, okay.
That's exactly where I was going to go with this, but... Jeremy, do you have anybody in mind?
I'd like to have Barry Sanders on the show. I'd like... Well, okay. Let me defend this a little bit, because besides it being kind of a prototypical answer, I think it would be interesting to hear his take on the Calvin Johnson situation right now, because it's something that he went through and got through, right? Like, now he's a big part of the organization. He shows up at all these events. He has a good relationship with the team. Did it take a change in ownership? Did it take a change in general managing? Or did it just take time for him to kind of get over that? And maybe he could provide he probably isn't really that interested in talking about that since it's so far in the past. But I'd be kind of interested to see his point of view, because that's still like a big black eye to some people in this organization. But I think everyone within the organization has moved on from it. And I'd like to kind of hear more about that.
You know what? If this is going to be a fan podcast, Alice Cooper is a very big Detroit Lions fan. I'd have him on.
I did not know that. Cool. I'd be down with that.
Give me your hilarious answer now, Ryan. Since I'm just being all serious and stupid.
Yeah, he grew up in Michigan. All Michigan teams: Detroit Tigers, Lions, Red Wings, Detroit, Michigan, everything.
Hey man, if I'm gonna have one guy come on the Pride of Detroit podcast, it'll probably be
John C.
We need to hurry up, though, because I need to get one of those ice cream sandwiches.
Oh, God.
literally 2 minutes from my apartment, and it's dangerous.
2 minute walk or 2 minute drive?
2 minute drive.
Maybe you should walk. Just saying.
What are you trying to say right now, you fucking dirtbag?
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, not all of us have such, like, you know, readily available avocados. We don't walk out onto our porch and have avocados to fucking pick out of our trees.
I think you mean Wingstop.
Cali boy.